It is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in live at Joy 620, or you're listening to the podcast. You can find it at investinghope.com. You can also find it iTunes, Google Play app, wherever podcasts are found. You can find the show. We, again, are thankful that you listen to what we have to say. So, and by we, I mean what I have to say every single week. And this week is just like most weeks. I have a lot to say when it comes to abortion and life. And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the smallest human being to ever survive birth is what they're saying. They believe it is the smallest one to survive. And we're going to talk about that child, and we're going to look at some legislation that Illinois just put forth and the direction they are taking that state. If you thought New York went extreme, Illinois went further. And so we're going to talk about that. We're also going to look at fertility rates across the country and in the world and why that should matter to us as well. So let's start with what happened in, I believe it was California. So born at 23 weeks and 3 days, you heard that right, 23 weeks and 3 days, Sabi is now the world's smallest surviving premature baby. This little girl, nicknamed Sabi by her doctors, weighed in at 8.6 ounces when she was born. 8.6 ounces. Her survival is great news and truly a remarkable testament to medical advancement, prayers, and this little girl's fighter's heart. And of course, I'm a sucker for heartwarming stories in my social media feed, and I love seeing life celebrated and fought for, and this story hit me in all the right places. In the midst of these feel-good stories, however, I can't help but to juxtapose them with the current abortion and life debate of the day. It seems like 2019 has been the year of life. We have witnessed a national dialogue on an issue that has plagued our country since 1973, when abortion became the law of the land. This national dialogue, it seems, for the first time in a long time, is having staying power. Political leaders are drawing lines in the sand as they make bold declarations and pass bold legislation. New York did this by lighting up Ground Zero to celebrate the passing of the Reproductive Health Act that allows for abortion throughout an entire pregnancy. Illinois just this week debated a bill that would make abortion a fundamental right while stating that a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus does not have independent rights in that state. And we'll talk more about Illinois here in just a little bit. During the past couple of months, we have also witnessed Alabama, Missouri, and Louisiana pass laws to enshrine and codify protections for life in the womb with, in some cases, outright bans on abortions. This comes as no surprise to anyone involved in pro-life or pro-choice advocacy. Both sides have spent decades fighting for political and cultural support on these issues. Lobbying organizations and political candidates have written a myriad of fundraising letters and profited greatly as they seek to make their case to the public. That's why this news out of San Diego concerning Sabi is so interesting. News outlets are running the story, celebrating this quote-unquote miracle and championing the heart of this tiny little human in one segment or column, while they champion the abortion laws out of New York and Illinois and denounce heartbeat laws out of Alabama and Missouri in a neighboring piece. Notice the dichotomy here. Baby survives at 23 weeks and 3 days. New York lights up Ground Zero to celebrate law that allows for abortion at 23 weeks and 3 days. These two headlines run counter to each other, but seem to be a daily occurrence in today's news. The current quote-unquote woke culture we find ourselves in my estimation, has reached an impasse. We have spent years humanizing and protecting everything from trees to wildlife and beyond, all the while dehumanizing our very own as he or she grows inside of a womb. This is the goal, after all. The abortion lobby understands that ultrasound technology and progress in science and research is making the humanization of children in the womb much easier, as parents are able to see their child in vivid images on a large screen. Denying or dehumanizing life in the womb is denying our very own existence on this planet. We, after all, found our genesis in a womb. That is a story shared by all of us, regardless of what side of the fence we find ourselves on. We bring harm to society when we neglect this fundamental truth. This debate and conversation is far from over, but I do believe we are ever so close to seeing a culture where abortion is unthinkable. Sabi's life is an amazing illustration of what we can do as a society if we choose to fight for our most vulnerable neighbors. Sabi, at 23 weeks and 3 days, was not a clump of tissue or a parasite seeking to attack her mom. No, she was and is a unique individual who has never been created before and will never be created again. Sabi was no more or less human at 23 weeks and 2 days than she is today, snuggled up with her parents on the couch. Her humanity began at conception, and we are blessed to live in a society where she has a chance at life. May this truth be so for all humanity. And so that's what we have. In San Diego, California, you have a baby born prematurely, 23 weeks and 3 days, and then roughly five months later, was able to go home with her parents from the hospital. Now put that beside the news that we've heard over the last year. The governor of Virginia, who comes out and says that when a baby is born, that the mom and the doctor will then talk about, they'll make the baby comfortable, and then they'll talk about what to do with the baby. We have people in Washington trying to put forth a bill that would say that if a baby survives a botched abortion, they deserve rights in this country just like any other human. And you have one side of the aisle, the pro-choice aisle, saying, no, we do not support that bill. You have New York, you have Illinois, you have Vermont, you have other states saying, we will allow abortion up until pregnancy. You have people arguing about viability. When is a baby viable? Is the baby viable at 20 weeks? Is the baby viable at 25 weeks? And what we know with Sabi in San Diego, California, 8.6 ounces, 23 weeks and 3 days. We have friends of our family that had a child at 22 weeks, and the child is still living. But yet we have a society. We have a society that says, and we have laws that say, that even though that baby can survive, that baby doesn't have a right to life. We just today in Washington, there was a Senate panel and a conversation with someone that actually survived a botched abortion. And the only reason she's here today to talk about it is because a nurse stepped in and took care of that child that was left to die in the hospital. And you had someone sitting beside her who's an abortion advocate who refused right there in front of that grown woman who survived a botched abortion, refused to say that that woman had a right to life when she was born. They can't even bring themselves to say that once a child is out of the womb, that child has a right to live. Now think about that for a second. I get called extreme because I'm a pro-lifer that believes life begins at conception. And I don't believe you can take a life away. I don't believe you should be able to take that life at any point in the pregnancy. I believe that the choice was made before the pregnancy. And I'm called extreme for that. Okay, that's fine. But you have people that are standing there in Washington representing constituents that are unwilling to say that a baby outside of the womb has every right as any other human in this country. They can't even bring themselves to say that. And so what do we do with a 23-week, 3-day-old, or 3-day pregnancy where a baby is born at 8.6 ounces? Well, what does the news do? Of course they celebrate it. Articles celebrate it. They call her a miracle. They call her a miracle, and they celebrate the amazing work of the doctors and the hospital and the bravery of this little girl and the fighter's heart of this little girl. And then they don't see the irony when they give standing ovations and celebrate a law like that out of New York that not only says abortion is okay up until pregnancy, but it also says that and takes out of the code, out of the language of the law and illegal abortion. And we've already seen the ramifications of that, where a man attacked his girlfriend. He killed her. She was pregnant. He killed the baby. And prosecution, after this law was passed, had to come out and say, we're charging him with the murder of the mother, but because of this new law, we are having to remove the charge of the illegal abortion. Why? Because it's as if that baby never existed in the womb. So that's where we are. Just last week, we had in Missouri, we had a chance to for the last abortion clinic in that state to close down. Why? Now, some would argue it's because pro-lifers just are hateful people, that we don't care about women and we just want to push women back. But the reality is that they were going to close that abortion clinic because it wasn't meeting the standards of medical clinics. And over the last 10 years, they had a number of calls of botched abortions and terrible situations happen inside that clinic. Looks like to me we'd be calling for those clinics to operate in such a way that would certainly protect the mothers and also would protect the babies in the womb. So we're told, well, abortion is health care, that's a decision between a woman and the doctor. And then here recently we've seen the abortion lobby come out and say, well, shouldn't men factor in this somewhere? They want men to speak out on abortion as long as those men speak out in favor of abortion. Then they say things like these men should be paying child support. And pro-lifers are going, yes, men should take responsibility for their actions. 100%. We can get behind that. And so what we've seen over the last, just in 2019, is the abortion debate, the life debate has been in the forefront. It's been in the news. It's been on radio. It's been everywhere. And science and research is advancing to a point where we are able to see a child that weighs 8.6 ounces, born at 23 weeks and 3 days, live to go home with its parents. And we rightly celebrate that. And at the same time, we have folks that would say that abortion at 23 weeks and 3 days is completely fine, not just for the health of the mother, but for any reason whatsoever. You don't like the gender of your child? Abort it. You don't like the race of the baby daddy? Abort it. Your finances aren't straight? Then just abort that child. Oh, you're not finished with school? Just abort the child. At some point, the hypocrisy and the truth is going to be too hard to hide, and a generation is going to stand up for a generation that has been aborted. And I believe that's what we're seeing. That's the direction we're going, as state after state puts into law protections for the most vulnerable among us, which are those in the womb. We'll talk more about Illinois when we come back. Hallelujah. In the presence of my enemies, I raise a hallelujah louder than the unbelief. So as we continue our conversation today on abortion in life, and we just the first segment we looked at little Sabie being born in San Diego at 8.6 ounces. And so that points to a number of things. It points to advancement in science and technology, and man, just hats off to the doctors and nurses that stepped in and made that possible. That little girl, you know, fought hard and now is at home with her parents after a long road in the hospital, and we celebrate that, and rightly so. But it's interesting to look at a story like that and then look at some of the laws and conversations that are being had around the country. And so what I want to do now is, there's a piece over in National Review from Alexandra DeSantis And she writes about life issues and abortion issues for the National Review. Highly recommend her. And so I'm just going to go through what she wrote at National Review, walk through what Illinois ended up passing, and just kind of and the reason I do this, and some folks, if you're local, you're going, why are we talking about New York and Illinois and Vermont? Why don't we just talk about what's going on in the state of Tennessee? Well, we need to understand what's going on around the country. We need to understand where these laws are coming from. And it's like I said in the first segment, and what I was referencing in the first segment is something that I wrote for Pregnancy Help News and for our blog over at investinghope.com. But we live in a culture, this quote-unquote woke culture. And some of you may hear that and go, what are you talking about, woke? Well, we live in a time where everyone wants to feel like they're woke. They want to feel like they have the answers for everything. We accept everything. We tolerate everything. But what we find is some of the folks that call for tolerance are the most intolerant, the ones that do not tolerate anything. And so they call for tolerance, but when a Christian stands up and says marriage is this, well, they come at us and say we're not tolerant. And when Christians stand up and say life begins at conception, we're called hateful religious zealots. You see, they're not being very tolerant of who we are. And so they act as if they're woke, and that's where you get into an issue when you're running down that path. Where you're saying, accept everything, everything is truth, you speak your own truth, I'll speak my own truth, there is no absolute truth. Well, when you run down that path, you run into situations where we have an 8.6-ounce baby born at 23 weeks and 3 days that survives. And when you're running down that woke path, you have a tendency to, well, I want to celebrate the fact that science has advanced to a point where a 23-week, 3-day-old baby can be born and survive at 8.6 ounces. But they can't even celebrate it because they go, well, if I celebrate this, will this not make it, will I not be admitting that that is life in the womb? Because out of the other side of their mouth, they would say that an abortion at 23 weeks and 3 days is completely fine. And that is not a life, and it's not a human, and it has no dignity. And it has no rights. But what we see in San Diego is that baby was born and survived and lives today. And so when you run down that path, it makes you get to a place where you're not even thinking logically. You're not thinking with rational thought. And so that's where we find ourselves in Illinois. Illinois, a place where Chicago is one of the most dangerous cities in the country. And yet they want to push a culture of death when it comes to babies in the womb. Another sidebar today, New York is debating a bill to outlaw the declawing of cats. Well, they just passed a bill that allowed for abortion up until the pregnancy. And now they're saying we need to protect these paws of these cats. We can't declaw them. Same thing with New Jersey saying that you can't take a cow to slaughter if that cow is pregnant. Notice the priorities there. But this in National Review, we find out what's going on in Illinois. So the Illinois State Senate, dominated by progressive lawmakers, is prepared to pass the Radical Reproductive Health Act, establishing abortion as a fundamental right and rolling back state-level restrictions on the procedure. On Tuesday, the bill passed the Illinois House on a 64-50 vote. The Reproductive Health Act repeals the state's ban on medically unnecessary partial birth abortion procedures, which also are banned under federal law, and mandates that all health insurance companies cover abortion procedures at any stage of the pregnancy for any reason. Now listen to that. That doesn't say any, you know, when Alabama passed a bill that said abortion is going to be outlawed in this state, and what'd you see in the headlines? Alabama passes extreme bill not even allowing for exceptions in rape and incest. The reason why I come out and say we need to stop with the exceptions nonsense is because of laws like this in Illinois. Who's the ones compromising? When we pass bills that allow for exceptions, the only ones compromising are pro-lifers. That's it. This bill in Illinois says not only are we going to allow abortions throughout the entire pregnancy, not only are we're going to remove laws that outlawed partial birth abortion, not only that, we're going to require health insurance companies to cover abortion procedures at any stage of the pregnancy for any reason. So when people say no one wants to get an abortion, no one is doing it out of convenience, no one is using that as birth control. Well, if that's the case, then why would you say let's allow abortion for any reason? It also repeals the state's Abortion Performance Refusal Act, which protects doctors and hospitals with moral objections to performing or participating in abortions. Did you hear that? So if you're a doctor in the state of Illinois and you say it is against my value system, it is against who I am, it is against who I want to be, whether you're religious or not. So you could have a secular doctor who just says, I don't perform abortions. My clinic does not perform abortions. Well, in the past, they were protected. Now, in Illinois, they have repealed the state's Abortion Performance Refusal Act. So those doctors are no longer protected. So what's that mean for a doctor that says they are pro-life? The Reproductive Health Act offers no religious or conscience-based exemptions for any such individuals or institutions. Now, who's the bigoted one now? Perhaps most disturbing of all, the Reproductive Health Act goes so far as to explicitly dehumanize unborn human beings in the quest to equate the right to kill the unborn with the right to make personal health care choices, asserting that a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus does not have independent rights under the laws of this state. This language, more than anything else in the legislation, exposes the depraved final goal of the abortion rights movement. It is not enough to use the law to enforce a twisted notion of justice that privileges a woman's right to bodily autonomy over the right to life of the human being inside of her. That vulnerable human being also must be explicitly stripped of his or her claim to any legal recognition whatsoever. Such a policy is necessary to sustain the argument for abortion. An unborn human being has value and rights in the eyes of the state only in as much as he or she is wanted by his or her mother. The governor of the state said this, "With reproductive health care under attack across the country, we must do everything in our power to protect women's rights in Illinois." Of course, that doesn't include the women that are in the womb. He went further, "Today was a major step forward for every woman in the state, and I look forward to continuing my work as an ally by signing the Reproductive Health Act into law." So this is where we are in the state of Illinois. They are going out of their way to remove rights from citizens in the guise of giving rights to women. Think about that. Before this bill was signed into law, at least at some point during the pregnancy, the baby was protected. Now, it's as if that baby doesn't even exist, because they put into the code an embryo, a fetus, an egg, will not be recognized or have rights in this state. They went that far to actually say that. And if you think back in the history of this country, there was another time where we removed rights from individuals. And praise God that we looked in the mirror and saw the wrong in that, and we restored rights to individuals. And now we have a group of folks in this country that are seeking to remove rights from the unborn. We'll be back. So as I'm thinking about what I'm about to talk about and the article I'm about to reference, I can't help but think, is there another show where you can talk about abortion, life, and fertility issues? Because that's what we're doing today, and that's what we try to do every week. We don't necessarily talk about fertility issues every week, but we are going to talk about that in this segment. But I think it's important that we talk about this issue because it is an issue that, like I said earlier, has plagued this country since 1973. And even after Roe v. Wade's overturned, it'll continue to be an issue that we should be concerned with and care deeply about. But I think it's important, too, that we look at here lately. I just finished a book on an audio. One thing that bothers me is when people say, hey, I just read this book, and then you find out that they actually listened to the audio version. So they didn't technically read it. So I'm letting you know I did not read the book, but I did listen to the book 1776 by David McCullough. I'm rewatching the miniseries on HBO of John Adams as 4th of July approaches. And I'm thinking about what all those folks went through back to make this country what it is today. And the founding fathers and the boldness that they had to go against the greatest country on the planet and going against and fighting for a revolution. And I think they did that while having a lot of kids. They did that while parenting and farming and doing all of these things. And then you fast forward to 2019, and we are seeing a decline in the numbers of children being born. And should that concern us? So there's a piece over at the American Conservative. You can find it at theamericanconservative.com. And it's entitled, Do Empty Cradles Matter? And then it says, Look at Japan. So let's just go through some of this. America's fertility rate has fallen to its lowest point in history. 1.73 babies per woman, according to data just released by the Center for Disease Control. The truth is starker still around much of the developed world, as noted by a new Institute for Family Studies report. Across Europe and Asia especially, each year brings more countries hitting their lowest fertility rates in history. In South Korea, for instance, the average woman can now expect to have less than one child. In the face of global climate change, this worldwide birth dearth might seem okay. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York recently noted that some may even be wondering, quote, is it okay to still have children, end quote. Some experts have a different question. Should we even care? Conrad Hackett, senior demographer at the Pew Research Center, recently asked this question at a forum on family issues hosted by the Brookings Institution. Why do we care if fertility is low? In fact, we should care that fertility is falling for at least three big reasons. First and foremost, the reality is that fertility rates around the world and in the U.S. are lower than what women themselves say they want. About 40% of American women in their 40s report that they would like to have more children than they currently do. This figure is markedly larger than the approximately 20% of their peers who say they have more children than they would like. Such numbers are worrying because research tells us that women who miss their fertility ideals tend to be less happy than those who make them. Secondly, low birth rates can also have a seismic economic consequence. A growing chorus of economists have begun to argue that slow population growth makes us all poorer. Declines in childbearing often portend ominous change in economic prospects for countries, major increases in public debt burdens, and slower economic growth, because they eventually lead to declines in the number of adults working, absent major immigration, as the political economists Nicholas Erdstadt and Hans Groth have noted. This may seem counterintuitive. Most people visualize the economy as a pie, and with more people, the pie must be divided into smaller pieces. So fertility reduction should make us all richer. But this argument falls apart under a little scrutiny. It's true that with fewer people, the pie needn't be shared, but we all know how parties really work. If fewer people are coming, you cook less food. The economy is no different. Businesses only invest in growing markets. If the market is expected to shrink in the future due to low population growth, then businesses won't invest. Consider how hard it is to grow a business in a shrinking state. The entire business case for investment depends on a growing market. Real estate prices in Appalachia or Detroit, places where populations are falling, aren't helping families build wealth. Wages in Japan, where fertility has been below replacement for decades, have been even more stagnant than America's in recent years. Debt and entitlement burdens in declining Eastern European countries are monumental. Academic research from the U.S. clearly shows that birth rates drive future entrepreneurship. Thus, if population is shrinking, we can expect to see less investment and less growth. When the party gets smaller, we cook less food, and fewer people bring extra side dishes, leaving us with fewer total food options. Demographic stagnation leads to a diminished maternity quality, material quality of life. Finally, as J.D. Vance observed at the American Conservatives annual gala in May, he said, quote, "We should care about declining fertility not just because it's bad for our economy, but because we think babies are good. And we think babies are good because we're not sociopaths. Babies can be transformative for the men and women who have them and for the families they build and grow." Vance went further. "I care about declining fertility because I've seen the role of fatherhood, the positive role that it can play in the lives of my friends and in my community. I've seen young men who are relatively driftless but became rooted and grounded when they had children." And he went further. "And in my own life, I felt the demons that come from a traumatic childhood melt away in the laughter and the love of my own son." And so what we know is having babies is a good thing. It's a good thing for the economy. It's a good thing for families. It's a good thing for everyone's psyche. But instead, we live in a society now that puts career and studies and selfish desires over parenting. And then we have some folks that struggle with fertility. And they want nothing more than to have a child and are unable to have one. And so now that my wife and I, we have four children, we've had five pregnancy, one miscarriage, and now have four living children. People look at us weird. And we just have four. My mom was one of seven. And you go back further, you talk to families that had many kids. Now, why is that? Why are we running from that? Now, we can say that, well, climate change has made us, well, we need to decrease the population, not add to it, to protect the planet. Now, you can make that argument, I guess. I don't think it's a good argument. But the reality is, having babies changes things. Maybe we can't go on that vacation we've always wanted. Maybe we can't go out to eat like we've always wanted. Maybe we can't build that dream home like we always wanted because now we got to think about children and what they're going to cost us. Maybe we love sleep a little too much and we don't want to be woke up in the middle of the night. Maybe you don't want to drive an amazing 12-passenger van like the Wood family, and that's okay. But at some point, we have to deal with this issue. This is a pro-life issue, certainly, but it's also an economic one. And just like that article was pointing out, that society and cultures cannot sustain themselves without reproducing. So I've had conversations with people before about my idea of what traditional marriage is, and my idea of traditional marriage comes from the scripture. I believe the government should get out of marriage altogether, but that's a story for another day. But when we think about it, when we push so hard against traditional marriage, well, what happens? One of the points of marriage is to reproduce. Why? Well, there's a number of reasons why, but even at a secular level, a society and culture cannot sustain itself if it's not having children, if it's not reproducing. So don't give a side eye to the family that decided to have four or five kids. Tip your hat to them. And if you're listening to this show and you're a young person and you're saying, look, I just don't want any part of children, I would say I got married at 22 years old. Had my first child, I was 25 or 26. There are a few things I've done in my life that are better than being a dad. And I would argue maybe there isn't a thing. Clearly, getting married is at the top of the list. But the responsibility of being a dad, of looking at my children and going, out of everyone this planet has ever seen, I was picked to be the dad to them. There's nothing like it. Even in the terrible nights where they're not sleeping and all they do is cry, when they throw up on you, when they do all of those things. There truly is nothing like it. And so when you look at these articles and you look at the conversations that are being had, let's get to where that comes from when people are saying quit having kids. Is it really about the climate? Or is it because we're selfish? And then you think about those that would do anything to have children and cannot. And we need to be praying for those folks as they walk this journey and this path. We'll be back. Every heart will know there is no name above the name of Jesus. Death could not hold him down. No grave could keep him bound. All sin and sickness bow to the name of Jesus. So as we finish up today, I hope that these articles and the different points that are made are helpful as we look in the direction we need to go as a society, as a culture, as a movement, as Christians. I mean, this isn't, I was telling somebody the other day, if we truly believe there are unique human individuals inside the womb, then shame on us for not speaking out. And look, when I say speaking out, I don't mean making that Facebook post that you know is just going to make people angry. I mean actually having conversations with people, challenging people when you hear things said, challenging yourself when you say things, when you think things. We need to research these issues. Why are we pro-life? Why do we believe life deserves protection? Like, have we asked ourselves those questions? Because you don't need to be challenging anybody if you haven't thought through it. We need to look in the mirror and say, look, am I selfish? Are the things that I'm doing right now to prop me up? That's what I love about the pro-life movement. Most movements are about self. It's like if I joined a redheaded movement, well, it would be to protect redheads. It would be about me. But the pro-life movement is one that says we are going to go out of our way to protect others, not just my children. I'm not just going to protect my children. I'm looking to protect other children. I'm looking to protect other moms, people that aren't my wives. Like we're doing things to protect other people. That's the whole point of the pro-life movement. And so have we given it thought? And I get it. Like on social media, it's hard because a lot of people say a lot of things and you want to go hard at all of them. But that may not be the answer. Maybe it would be send them a private message. You're not going to convince anybody in a comment thread. It's knowing when to engage and when not to engage. But it's also being aware of what's going on around our country. Because I would argue there's a lot of people that claim to be pro-choice that probably have no idea that Illinois just passed that law. The vast majority of people that call themselves pro-choice would disagree with abortion after 20 weeks. But what they don't realize is there's laws being passed around this country that allows for abortion throughout the entire pregnancy. And so are we having those conversations? I pray that we are, and I pray that a change is being made. And I'm looking, I just read an article while we were at break about the judges that are slowly making their rise to the top when it comes to if another judge is going to be appointed during the current administration. And man, they're good ones. Really, really good ones. Pro-life ones. But again, even if that were to happen, where are we placing our hope? What are we doing for the young ladies, the young moms in our communities? are we partnering with pregnancy centers? We have a baby shower next week. You want to help out? You want to stand up? You want to really be pro-life and step out and say, not just with my voice, not just with a bumper sticker, but by actually doing something? We could use a pack and play. We could use a car seat. We could use a diaper bag, a bathtub, diapers, wipes. Go to investinghope.com and find out more about that. Reach out to us and see how you can partner with us. We'll talk to you next week.